Welcome to the Officer Media Group Roll Call Podcast. Officer Roll Call is meant to inform and entertain. Now, let's get into this episode.
Welcome to the lineup, Officer Magazine's roundup of this week's police and law enforcement news. I'm your host, Joe Vince, assistant editor for Officer Magazine. And with me again today, my co-host talking about crime is...
Lieutenant Frank Borelli, retired extraordinaire.
There we go. Oh, I like
that. I might
have
had too much coffee this morning. I'm not sure.
Oh, that sounds good. Well, we are going to get started. One slightly caffeinated and one highly caffeinated host with you. as always, a packed show. So let's get started. We begin with two stories out of New Jersey and New York. The first one, two Galloway police officers were injured, one seriously, responding to a call where, as they came to the door, a suspect came out with a knife and stabbed both of the officers. The attack was caught on their body cameras, and you see just a and we've talked about this before, just how suddenly things changed on a call concerning a, let's see, this was a 911 hangup. And when they reached the scene, woman answers the call, talks to the officers, mentions a person inside. The person comes out and immediately, as the officers encountered them, attacks. This also, this week, we also had body camera footage from NYPD where two officers were shot. And again, a case where things turned violent quickly, and a suspect that they had encountered as far responding to an assault suddenly turned violent and snatched one of the officers' weapons and opened fire. Frank, like I said, we've talked about this before, just how quickly things can turn on a call. And these body camera the videos show just, I mean, it captures just that, where you see these suspects seemingly calm and in control just turn on the officers.
And the thing here, Joe, that really gets me is we're looking at one situation where you have a relatively open space outside of a house. Mm-hmm. But proximity matters. And like a suspect can close, everybody's probably heard of the Tooler drills and the 21-foot rule, which is not a rule. It's all there's so much misinformation. But at the end of the day, you know, somebody 20, 30 feet away can still be on you in a second and a half, 2 seconds.
Yeah.
And that's not a lot of reaction time. It takes the average person half a second to realize that there's anything going on and another half a second to respond to it at a bare minimum. And, you know, by then, if you've got somebody with a dangerous weapon, they're on you. And now the fight's on. And so on the first one with the guy with the knife, you know, it says that the fight went on for several minutes. I don't know if you've ever been in a fight for your life. Everybody listening to this podcast who has been understands what several minutes mean. Fighting for your life for 30 seconds is like running a marathon.
Yeah.
Several minutes. Oh my God. By the time you're done, you're exhausted. I remember a friend of mine, we fought with this guy and we were really legitimately trying not to hurt the guy, but there was a legitimate threat and there's two of us and one of him. And we were just trying not to hurt this guy. And we probably fought with this guy for 3, 4, 5 minutes. And it was all struggling. It was all trying to control. By the time we were done, the fellow officer looks at me, the ambulance had showed up, and he climbs up the back of the ambulance, grabs the oxygen thing and puts the oxygen over his face. We were exhausted. We were wiped out. And the second one, you know, you're talking about an apartment complex inside of an apartment. You want to talk about close quarters. Think about an apartment you've been in. You walk in the door. Unless you step into an open room, there's a hallway that's usually 3 feet wide. Put two people in a 3-foot hallway and there's no way not to touch each other. We're talking about extremely close quarters. And then, you know, the fight's on and people forget that every time a police officer's in a fight, there's a gun involved because we bring it with us. But ugly situations. I'm glad the officers are going to be okay. I hope any mental and emotional trauma they recover from equally well as any physical injuries. But definitely, you know, lessons to be learned. No matter how many times we think we've learned them, we always get these ugly reminders. You know, it hurts, but we always get the ugly reminders.
And in the case of the Galloway incident in New Jersey with the knife, this is Friday, we're recording this. I posted a story, Phoenix, body camera footage released of a knife attack on a Phoenix officer, where the officer was escorting a trespassing suspect out of a convenience store, and the suspect pulled a knife and stabbed the officer twice in the neck. And luckily there were a security guard and a clerk were able to subdue the individual. But I think the public at times feels like, oh, well, you know, the suspect has a knife, the officer has a gun, it's not a fair fight. You know, it's the line from Untouchables about bringing a knife to a gunfight type of thing. But it's still deadly. And it both of these instances show just how dangerous that individual with the knife can be. Like you said, if it's a closed space, just the sudden change in a suspect, you know, who's nearby with the knife, and this officer in Phoenix stabbed twice in the neck. I mean, he is lucky to be alive. He's still in the hospital and recovering, but you know, just really dangerous stuff.
So I'm going to make a comment here. There's no such thing as a fair fight.
Right.
One of the best things I've ever read. If you find yourself in a fair fight, you failed to properly plan beforehand. I don't want to be in a fair fight. I don't ever want to lose a fight. Losing a fight for a cop means I die. Don't ever want to lose a fight. Don't want it to be a fair fight. I want the odds so overwhelmingly in my favor that the person who's even thinking about attacking me goes, nope, that's a bad idea. I think I'll just go along peacefully. That's optimal. These guys, again, hard lessons to learn. We can never forget them.
Moving on to our next stories, and these are also connected. The first one is out of Ohio, where a corrections officer was fatally shot in what's being called a tragic accident during a training exercise. And then also this week, there was another training accident. This in Florida, where a Pinecrest police officer was accidentally shot on a firing range. I feel like this is just a couple weeks after you and I talked about a couple other training accidents, and I think you had discussed just firearms handling, and you know how important that is, especially in training.
You know, the thing is, and I truly believe this. Yeah, people say tragic accidents, people say training accidents, people say accidents. Okay, officer accidentally shot. I know there are people out here like that will yell at me. You weren't there. You can't render judgment. You don't know this. You don't know that. I'm 100% with all of them. I was not there. It's not my place to render judgment. Here's the statement I'll make. I've been a training officer for 35 years. Knock on wood, nobody's ever been hurt in any of my training sessions. I've pissed off a lot of people because I will not bend safety rules. I had a chief of police tell me he'd never invite me back to train again because I insisted on disarming him before I let him into my training venue. And I went, so be it, chief, but I'm not going to be the guy that lets you in here. Something happens, one of your officers or yourself gets shot and killed. I'd rather you be pissed off at me and not invite me back, but I'm not doing that. And it took him that moment to go, okay, this isn't about who's got the most authority. This isn't about the ego. This is about this safety officer, this training officer, making sure my officers are safe, and he doesn't care who he pisses off along the way. And we've got to get there. These accidents are preventable with proper safety protocols that are enforced 100% without pause, and we don't care who we piss off along the way. And I could harp on that all day. We've talked to other experts in the field, and you've done articles about this. Interrogated is not the word. My caffeine brain's going a million miles an hour.
Interviewed?
Interviewed's a good word. Yeah. So you've interviewed these people. You know what I'm saying? These accidents aren't accidents. They are negligence, and it's avoidable, and we have to get better at it.
And again, not in either of these cases, I don't know all of the details, but it's human nature that I don't want to necessarily say complacency, but you know, you start out where it's like, I follow the training, these guidelines to the letter, you know, and then because nothing happens, everything's fine. It kind of falls away. It's just, it can be human nature. And I think the good training instructors are just constantly vigilant about not letting that creep in for themselves, but also the people they're training, whether it's that authoritative, like, well, hey, I'm the chief, I'm the captain or whatever. I can do whatever I want.
Hey, you know what though? Complacency gets people killed on the street. No such thing as a routine traffic stop, right?
Yeah.
We have to carry that same attitude into training. There's no such thing as complacency. Routine can get you killed. We got to avoid it.
Good point. Moving on to our next story. This is out of New York as well, where a video captured New York State police troopers helping out firefighters on hose duty, actually, before the fire crews reached the scene. They were dousing a burning home after rescuing a dog. Frank, we've talked before about firefighters and police officers. Here are our state troopers really doing double duty.
It is. And I love to pick on my firefighter brothers, sisters. They'll call us holster this or whatever. We call them hose beaters. We poke fun at each other. We're all on the same team. And I think that's abundantly clear. What really tugs at my heartstrings on this story is that the troopers broke down the door to save a dog. Yeah. I mean, come on. Yes. Pets that die in fires, just a tragedy. It's a horrific feeling. They saved a dog. And then while they're waiting for the firefighters to arrive, they use the hose to try to keep the fire from spreading. I mean, they're trying to really do everything that they can. Here's the thing. And I was a volunteer firefighter for 11 years. I am far, far from being an expert at fighting a fire. But here's what I know. If a house is on fire and you open a door, you can fuel that fire with air, literally to the point of, what was the name of that movie? Backdraft. You can create a backdraft. And the damn house will blow up because it'll burst into flames with all the surge of oxygen. So while it's great, they open this door, they save this dog, it worked out the right way. They really need, every police officer should, because quite often we get to the scenes of fires before firefighters can. And we need to know what it means when a room is breathing or when a house is breathing. And we ought to know the signs when we should not open that door, because it's going to make things 100 times worse. I'm glad that wasn't the case here. Glad they saved the dog. I'm glad they were able to, you know, try to beat the firefighters at their own game, so to speak. But I'm glad it worked out for the best. Yeah, kudos to everybody involved.
I think you point out, too, is, and something we've talked about before, here were troopers that really didn't, not that they didn't have to save the dog, but this is, they're putting themselves at risk, even just, if you've ever been around any type of structure that's burning, the heat that throws off, and what that feels like is incredible. To be able to do that outside of just basically maybe securing the area and making sure everyone, people are out of the way and no one's going to get close to the fire and just wait for the firefighters to come there. That's all really had to do. And here these guys are trying to save property, saving pets. I mean, great job all around.
Yeah.
Moving on to our next story, and I think we're going to get blamed for East Coast bias, but we're going to stay in New York. This is out of New York City, where the NYPD has updated their dress code, which will go into effect next month. They're trying to, I guess, crack down on, quote, sloppy officers. They're banning shorts, cargo pants, and other attire. The idea is to basically create more of a uniform professional look among the officers. And I'm sure a lot of this is coming before the summer and before, the weather warms up and, you know, there might be the idea to shift to shorts or lighter apparel.
You know, the thing is here, though, every police department has a dress code, right? We all have grooming standards. There's a uniform. The uniform's issued. Now, here recently, a lot of agencies have been very hesitant to be strict in enforcement because recruiting and retention has been so difficult. Right. And for years, morale was just horrible with the way people were attacking law enforcement. A lot of it was just ignored. It was like, well, is it really that big of a deal? I mean, does it matter at the end of the day if your shoelaces are black or if they're gray? Well, when you actually look at the definition of the word uniform, yeah, it does. Is there a difference between blue utility pants and blue cargo pants? Yeah, there is. We may not like it. We may think it's silly, but at the end of the day, the uniform code is the uniform code, and we should all be in compliance with it. The really good leaders will write uniform policy that allows for comfort but professional appearance depending on the duty assignment. Bicycle cops should not have to wear long pants. Shouldn't have to. Shorts should be part of their uniform. Mounted officers should be prohibited from wearing shorts. You don't need to be on a horse in shorts. How's that going to look with riding boots, right? Little common sense, a little bit of give and give. I think it's ridiculous, and I don't mean to piss off the Police Benevolent Association in New York, but the president of the BPAs, they're going to file a legal challenge to the new rules when it really only sounds like all they're doing is enforcing the rules that have been there to begin with. And if that's what you're doing, you're grandstanding, dude. I mean, I'm sure you're good at your job. I appreciate what you do in your job. You can call me out on it, cuss my name. I don't care. But, you know, if the uniform code calls for a navy blue turtleneck and somebody wears a white one or a gray one or whatever, they're out of uniform. It is quite simple. It really is.
Yeah, and it is that dance between, wanting to find something that does create a uniform standard, a professional standard, and not being so restrictive that it becomes a hindrance to recruiting or retention. I think too of departments that have contended with the idea of tattoos and how many tattoos are okay, where, etc. I do think you do have to keep that standard because that and this might sound, maybe I'm overblowing it, but it's like when we were talking about the training, you get that sort of complacency or what I'll call mission creep, or just even a slippery slope of just like, okay, you let this thing go. And then it's like, well, why can't we have this thing? You know, why can't I wear polka dots or what have you? And,
no
one, all you've got is you guys just wearing a badge and that's about it. So, it is something that departments, and I think probably more so the smaller departments that might have tougher times recruiting and needing more carrots, I suppose, to attract officers, that this might, dress codes might be something they struggle with more. But it didn't seem like the NYPD update was all that, all that. It's not like they're wearing the button down old from the 50s style double breasted type of police.
Yeah, I mean, thank now. God this isn't the 50s and we're not wearing full formal dress blues wool uniforms in 100 degree heat.
Yeah. Moving on to our next story, and yes, you guessed it, we're still in New York.
Well, wait, we're not. We're in Texas.
Oh, we're in Texas. Okay.
We're in Texas.
We are in Texas. But this was in a New York newspaper. A Texas lawmaker took out an ad in the New York Post looking to recruit police officers to come work in Texas. I believe that the headline from the ad was, "I escaped New York and moved to Texas." And the ad listed, multiple law enforcement agencies in North Texas. This is probably I don't want to say outlandish, but it's one of the bigger ways that we've seen people try to draw police recruits from other areas. I think some cities have taken out billboards. Was it Atlanta, I believe, took out billboards in New York, recruiting officers. Never an ad that also was really, wasn't just touting, saying coming to Texas. It was almost like, get out of New York. Like, being in New York is bad. Come to Texas and be a police officer.
You know, the thing is, this kind of stuff, this kind of recruiting tactic, it's probably been going on for decades, and we just didn't pay attention to it until recently, when we have this huge shortage and these recruiting and retention challenges and all of the different stuff that's been in the news, from sales pitch to marketing ploys. I mean, this is news because of the recruiting angle, but you want to come work someplace where people give you a little bit more respect, where, it's not quite as crowded, where maybe the stupid's not quite as thick. I like the message. Dude from Texas going, come on down. I'm surprised we're not seeing the same thing out of places like Montana or Wyoming. Personal friend of mine is now superintendent of Wyoming Highway Patrol. And the whole state of Wyoming is about as populated as the county he used to be sheriff in. Maybe a little bit more, because I guess the highway patrol there is, I don't know, 1.5 times the size of the sheriff's agency he used to come from. But I mean, think about that. You went from a county with X number of deputies to a state with not many more troopers. And it talks about, it speaks to the population density. And whether we like it or not, population density plays a big role in how the community relates to police and what the values are and what the belief the system is. And I mean, I would rather be a cop in Texas every day than a cop in New York City. And I've never been a cop in either one, but I know which one I'd take.
Moving on to our next story, and we're going to head over to the West Coast. This is out of Washington. I really like this story. This was a story about the Yakima Police Department and three retired detectives and a retired judge who are working in their cold case unit, looking at this about roughly 70 cold cases that the department has that stretch back to the 1970s. And they come in at least once a week, like every Wednesday, and go over cases. We've talked about some area departments that are using retired officers for school as school resource officers. This was I just love this idea of retired detectives being able to put their detective, their investigative abilities at work for departments to crack cases that detectives who are currently in the department might not be able to handle because they've got such a caseload as it is. Just a great idea.
It really is. And when you look at cold cases, one of the biggest problems is looking at them and not seeing the same thing you've always seen, right? So I look at a case, I look at an evidence set, I look at interviews, I look at answers, I look at circumstances, dates, times, blah, blah, blah. And there's something I don't see that you see it. And, cold cases are cold cases for a reason. Normally, you're just missing that one thing. You're missing a statement. You're missing a clue. You're missing something. And sometimes it's there, but you don't see it because you already looked at it 1,000 times and you're so used to seeing it, you don't even notice it. So I think this is a great thing to do. Honestly, I'd love to, if I had to go embrace a new hobby, I'd want to find a local group of guys that did this, that worked the cold cases, that worked with the agencies local to go, okay, look, we did this, and hand it off to the detectives and let them make the case and close the case, knowing that you took another criminal off the street or you gave a family some kind of resolution and closure. I think this is awesome, and I would encourage other agencies and places to do it if they can.
Absolutely. I think we're going to see too, as the years go on, as we, as people are able, as we get older and still really have a lot of our functions, it's not the same, you know, people in their 70s, it's not, you know, maybe physically you've got, you're missing some steps, but mentally still available, to do these types of, do this kind of work. And for things that, for cases that, yeah, wouldn't maybe get attention at all. And honestly, I, you know, this is potentially a CBS series in the making, you know, bunch of retired guys cracking cases, you know, call me, I'll pitch it.
Well, wasn't this in, what was the TV show? Castle, starring Nathan Fillion. And he worked with a group of cold case. They were, it was a civilian group of famous detective novelists or something. And they worked cold cases to try to resolve them. It was a really cool episode of the series, I think.
There you go. All right. Moving on to our last story and a return of, our,
Karma. Return of Karma.
We've kind of had an absence of really kind of dumb criminals, or in this case, karma getting the criminals. This is out of Michigan, where a motorcyclist decided he was going to taunt police officers doing wheelies and donuts in front of a cruiser, and then leading Dearborn police and Michigan state troopers on a high speed chase, hitting speeds around 100 miles per hour. He was being tracked by a helicopter and eventually was caught when he ran out of gas. And you know, it just goes to show you, if you're going to be doing this, make sure you're doing it on a full tank of gas.
You know, no, that's not the lesson to be learned here, okay? I love the fact when people are arrogant without good cause and it comes back to bite them in the butt, that is hands down for me. That's like karma in action, delivered immediately, right? And here's my belief. I believe there are a whole bunch of people out there say karma's a bitch. I don't believe karma's a bitch. I believe karma is the universe's customer service agency, and it delivers what you order. So here's this idiot who decides he's going to taunt these police officers doing wheelies and donuts around their patrol cars and essentially goading them into chasing him, thinking, I'm on a motorcycle. I can outrun these guys all day, every day. It's not going to be a problem. And then dumbass runs out of gas. Well, that's karma. Karma delivered what you ordered, my friend. And now you get to pay your fines and lose your motorcycle. And hey, at least the guy didn't wreck and get hurt or anything, but. Yeah, no, this is definitely goes to the top of the dumb criminal list and the karma delivered list.
Well, if we had the budget, I would end this right here with John Lennon's instant karma. But since we don't, you can just imagine. I don't know if you saw what I did there.
Yeah, anyway, I saw what you did there. Very good. Very well played, sir. Well played. Thank you.
It's you know, it's like we write this stuff. that wraps it up for us this week. Again, as always, thanks very much for listening. As you can tell, we enjoy doing this every Friday.
It's a lot of fun. We do all of these different podcasts, right? Our command Q&A and our roll call and everything we do, everything else. This one's the most fun because honestly, I don't filter it. And just recently I was on a guest. I think it was the Tale of Two. It was a dental show. I'd have to go find the podcast. It's coming out on the 23rd. Make sure we reference the correct title next week, but they actually have to have their show recorded 2 or 3 weeks in advance and edited because they have to beep out their bad words. This I enjoy this because I'm a little bit freer with my language. I'm still very aware of George Carlin's 7 words you can't say on the radio.
Yeah.
But they ignored that. It's like R2-D2 episode when some of them are talking and just the beeping going on. But
wow.
Yeah, this is a lot of fun. Everybody listening, come back next week and stay safe.
Take care.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of The Lineup. Please remember, the opinions voiced are not those of Officer Media Group or Endeavor Business Media, but only those speaking those opinions themselves. Thank you and stay safe.